The idea was, let's go build the most engaged fan engagement platform out there, one that lets fans call plays in real time and draft players for their real teams and really create something unique. And we went out and proved it in our own team, right? So we bought a team in the Indoor Football League. As you mentioned, we were the only team in this 10-team existing league that was letting fans, you know, do these types of things.
This is the Sports Tech All-Stars podcast, showcasing outstanding startups and initiatives in the global sports tech ecosystem. From Sports Tech X, the leading source for data and insights about sports tech, here is your host, Roan Malhotra.
Hey guys, this is Roan again, and welcome to another episode of the Sports Tech All-Stars podcast. Today, our focus is going to be on quite a topical topic, I guess. The theme of DAOs and blockchain and crypto and NFTs, and there's been so much happening in the Web3 space. And we're going to talk to someone who might have an idea about it. But even before this conversation started about all this, the idea of DAO is essentially to put the hands or put accountability and ownership into the hands of the community. And in sport, we've seen this happen in a few different ways. There are a few teams. For example, in Germany, there's a 50+1 rule. So fans own at least 51% of every football team that plays in Bundesliga 1 or 2. They have a right. They have ownership. They have accountability. Nobody can take their club away from them. But what if you gave fans more than just that, right? That is the big question. Are fans... are enough fans, educated enough, smart enough, invested enough to pick the team, decide the, call the plays, call set pieces, call all the actual tactical information that happens during a live sports game? Going beyond just jersey colors, going beyond just logos, what is actually, what are the players actually doing on the pitch, on the field, on the court? That is what we're going to discuss today with the founder of Fan Controlled Football, Sorab Farudi. Sorab, how are you doing?
I'm great, Ron. How are you?
Not too bad. Sorab, we have to start with a piece of news that Forbes, very nicely for you, picked up at the start of the year. I remember reading this article in January, which is Fan Controlled Football League raises 40 million Series A round led by crypto investors. So a lot to unpack over there. Which is about, of course, Fan Controlled Football. And I want to get you to talk about that. But before we get to the actual solution, I want you to talk about yourself. Because from what I have read, you are a venture-backed founder multiple times over. You've exited previous companies. And something very organically took you to the creation of Fan Controlled Football, right?
Yeah, absolutely. No, I started my career at Accenture out in DC, and always wanted to be in the startup space. So I found myself about a year after my first, I guess, quote unquote, real job in the real world, headed over to a startup to really get a taste of that life, and caught the bug. And started my first company in 2004, actually in the mobile space with my younger brothers. We were venture backed in 2008 and had an exit in 2011. And from there, founded and actually sold another couple companies in various sectors, but was always drawn to sports. I've played sports my whole life. I've watched sports my whole life. It's my passion outside of work and my family. I was born in Texas. I've always wanted to own the Cowboys. That was my lifelong dream ever since I can remember. And, got an opportunity back in 2014 to be a minority owner in an Arena Football League team, which if you're familiar or not with Arena Football, it's a miniaturized game of the outdoor American football game. So it's 7-on-7 indoors, played on a 50-yard field. It's really fun, fast-paced, exciting game, and I got really drawn into it. Even as a minority owner, felt like there was something unique about the game and the rise and growth in younger fans' passion for video gaming and interactivity. And you heard all of this stuff about fan engagement, and there really weren't any, you know, sports out there that were giving true fan engagement to fans. And so I came up with the crazy idea to merge those two ideas together, real world sports and video games. And why not create an IRL, real life league where fans could make the decisions like they do in a video game. The technology was there to be able to do it. No one had just taken the leap. So that's what we're working on. I have been literally since 2015. I've been working on building this business, and we were lucky enough to get some great backers with Animoca Brands and Delphi Digital to lead our Series A in January. And we actually are 12 days away from game one of season two of Fan Controlled Football.
And I know that's a much bigger season as well. You've gone to 8 teams from 4 teams. Animoca brings with them a bunch of the, let's say, coolest NFT collections out there, the apes and the cats, et cetera, into the league. But we'll get there in a second. Just to stay on the origins of the league, I know it was you and a couple of friends who invested in this team, which played in the IFL, right? That's what it would call the Indoor Football League. And then from there, you felt that essentially the league, if I read correctly, especially from that same Forbes article I referred to earlier, that you weren't happy with the way the league was running things and you wanted to take control of it yourselves. And that's what gave you the idea that, hey, what if we just took control and just gave all that control to the fans completely?
Yeah, look, our thesis originally, me and my co-founders actually are all, have been run venture-backed technology companies in mobile and gaming. And so our original plan was to actually build a platform. The idea was, let's go build the most engaged fan engagement platform out there, one that lets fans call plays in real time and draft players for their real teams and really create something unique. And we went out and proved it in our own team, right? So we bought a team in the Indoor Football League. As you mentioned, we were the only team in this 10-team existing league that was letting fans, do these types of things. Our thought, our goal was to build this platform, prove the platform out, prove the engagement model and the revenue model, and then license the platform, to the other teams in the league, and then taking it out, more broadly to teams in other leagues. And what we ran into a couple of things, right? It was a square peg in a round hole. We were very focused on the digital fan, right? We were looking at fan engagement from a different metric than all of our other owners in the league, which were really driven by ticket revenue and concessions and parking. And quite frankly, we weren't focused on the in-arena experience for those fans because we were really focused on how can we let fans call plays from anywhere in the world. And we had a global audience for this team in this league that probably not very many people have heard of, and our team was in Salt Lake City. That was the first piece. The second piece is when someone goes to buy a sports team, I don't care who it is, they can say there's no ego involved. There's some ego involved. You buy the team so you can make the decisions, right? As a team owner, right? I go back to Jerry Jones because that's my frame of reference for sports ownership. He owns the Cowboys and he makes the decisions. And as much as I would like to think Jerry's going to let fans call plays and make decisions for the Cowboys, he's never going to do that. And neither is his son when his son takes over the team. So what we kept running into was owners that we talked to said, yes, 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 up to a very small point. And you alluded to maybe game jerseys and music in the venue and things that don't really impact the play on the field. But when you got into things that were in the coach's domain, that could impact player selection, everybody just flat out said no. They were not going to allow fans to do that. And that was the challenge because that's what we thought was the huge opportunity was to do something that nobody else had done, which was to allow fans to really get involved at that level. And so a long story short, we made a really tough decision at the end of our first season in the Indoor Football League to actually walk away from the league and stand up our own league because that was the only way that we felt like we could build something from the ground up that was created first and foremost to put fans in control. And that's why it's called Fan Controlled Football League. Our motto is power to the fans. And so the entire design and the ethos and you know, we have founders and we're owners of this business, but we didn't go into it with the ego of we were going to make all the decisions. We built this thing from the ground up, knowing that we were going to turn the decision making over to fans. And so far, it's been working, better than we could have hoped.
Seems like it. And I think your pedigree, obviously, as founders of venture-backed, and you've exited, et cetera. So that helps you raise that initial capital that you need to launch a league, right? I mean, that's a pretty big jump. And you've just bought into a team, you realize, hey, man, the league's not letting us do things our way. We want to do it differently. And that differently always comes with challenges. Of course, we know that. So you want to do it in the way that you want to do it, which requires a certain scale, a certain level. And it seems like, yeah, you guys kind of smashed it in season one already. But with the deal that came in earlier this year, I think, how did that affect your planning for the year? Let me ask it that way. Because now with the idea of decentralized organizations, yeah, where everybody has a say, it's now become commonplace. Everybody talks about DAOs like this idea was always in our heads. No, it wasn't. It's probably been in the mainstream consciousness for maybe 6 months, a year at best. But you guys have been working on it for basically the last 5-6 years. So how did this change in public perception of this idea and the big investment from Animoca affect your plans? Did you feel more legitimate about what you were doing from before? Did you just now have a bigger vision than you had before?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. And I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, this is the way that we'd been thinking about fans engagement and interactivity. And, you know, I think the word is really governance of these teams in the league, goes back to our early days, 2015, 2016, of thinking about how we wanted to put fans in control. But you're right. The word DAO has really caught, fire here and caught more mainstream audiences' attention really in the last 6 months to a year. We always thought that we would allow fans to have ownership in the teams via equity and also governance. We're in the United States. It is very difficult to allow both things to happen within the same instrument, because if you do, it's a security. And by putting it in a security, unfortunately, with U.S. securities laws, it goes against decentralization, right? You have to be accredited. And if you're not accredited, you have to do it on a specific platform. And even there's all these restrictions. So it becomes very, very difficult to marry the two. And so, you know, we started looking at how can we break that up. We went back, our first round of capital was actually raised, was our seed round led by Lightspeed Ventures and Verizon Ventures in June of 2020. And that was really headed, kind of heart of the pandemic to allow us to play our first season in 2021. What we were able to do from there was prove out the model. That fans, we had four teams, a single location. Our entire model was about scalability. So if to your point, it takes a lot to pull off a league, but it's a lot easier if everything's in one place. So we didn't have any travel. We have shared services across the league. We've really changed the cost structure of what a sports league needs to have. So you can create real scalability in a single location. So from there, we were able to prove scalability. And then it was about headed into the second, round, the Series A. It was really about scaling both the league itself, also really leaning into the governance opportunities that Web3 provided. And what we saw, I would say Top Shot in particular, caught the sports world by storm from a Web3 standpoint. It really opened a lot of people's eyes to the power of Web3 and NFTs and what was possible. And so I went down that rabbit hole. And what struck me was community. There's a lot of really fun, great, amazing communities being built in the Web3 world and around NFTs in particular. As we looked at it, we saw an opportunity for us to build community around our teams and governance mechanisms around our teams via NFTs. So while we're not operating a quote unquote DAO for our teams currently, our four expansion teams are actually all governed via NFTs. You have to be an owner of one of our NFTs. It's called the Ballers Collective. So you have to own an FCF Baller for one of our four expansion teams in order to make decisions for that team. So not exactly a DAO. It's not done through tokens, and it's not entirely done in the Web3, you know, blockchain world. But we have now have put governance rights in the form of an NFT, which to me is that next frontier of utility for, you know, what can NFTs be outside of these, you know, of art and PFPs on social media. That's what we think becomes really powerful. So we are looking at DAOs. This $40 million we raised is actually allowing us to go look at other sports. Our holding company is called Fan Controlled Sports and Entertainment. So we're doing football now. It's our second season. We're going to be doing a second sport in the fall. We haven't announced yet which sport that will be, but we've talked about what we're evaluating. We're looking at fan-controlled baseball, fan-controlled cricket, fan-controlled basketball. So lots of opportunities for us to leverage our existing platform and an existing model into a second sport. And as we look out into 2023, you know, our goal is to have three leagues that are all giving this same access, power, and governance rights to fans, and continuing to kind of further lean into the Web3 ethos of decentralization. And we're going to introduce some DAOs into the mix, and tokenization, and all of the other things that I think become really powerful when it comes to fans having ownership, having control, and really from a value standpoint, putting the value that's created, putting a lot of that value in the hands of the fans, who are the ones that ultimately create the value in sports.
Big plans. It makes a lot of sense. Hey, man, I can tell you one thing. You go take fan-controlled cricket league to India, you're going to have some users signing on pretty fast. I think you know that already. If you didn't know, I'm Indian. Well, at least I was born Indian and love that sport. But no, I think the mechanics of what you're talking about are so interesting, and which is what I was so intrigued by straight away, that you had a core concept which now is become mainstream, as we just discussed. And so you immediately jumped on it. You leveraged that idea, getting Animoca on board. And I know a couple of the teams are going to be by some of the biggest crypto communities out there, the Bored Apes and the Gutter Cats, right? So you've really leveraged, I think, the whole momentum around Web3 blockchain, even if you're not using all of the mechanisms. You might be using some of them, but you're using that idea or jumping on that momentum. I want to ask a slightly different question. So that's on the technicality of how this league gets executed. But I have a personal question. Okay, this is just my own thought, and I'm really curious to hear what you have to say, which is, okay, I understand the execution model of how to take this idea and empowering fans is a really rich, very powerful idea. But my sports team of choice is Manchester United, all right? I don't know how much European football you watch, but they're not very good right now. And as a fan, as a longtime fan, I'm on numerous groups where everybody, of course, has opinion on what should be happening. Most of those opinions are not very good, I think. And that's maybe just my opinion. But my conflict comes from the idea that, hey, you've got somebody, a coach, a player, a trainer, who's spent his whole life educated themselves with full focus on this one task, lived, read it every single day. Versus you've got a fan who's very passionate, of course, who has best intentions at heart, but maybe doesn't understand the intricacies of the repercussions of their actions. I'm sure that's a thought that you've toyed with, right? And I'm curious to know, is there something that you built into the platform to, I don't know, is there a qualifying barrier for fans, or some sort of basic knowledge that they have to have before they can vote on plays? Like, how do you address that balance between, hey, just any Joe who's just watched a game for the first time in their life and now is voting on who should take the next, you know, penalty kick, versus a fan who really knows and really invested and their decision? Is there any sort of weightage on the platform?
Yeah, it's great. It's a great question. We put a lot of thought into it. There's a few mechanisms. So first, we say not all fans are created equal. So we've created something called Fan IQ. And so when you join the league and you pick your team, you are on that team's leaderboard. And the higher you are on the leaderboard, which is based on Fan IQ, the more influence you have. So it is a weighted vote, not a, you know, a simple majority or a simple democracy. So you get rewarded for putting in your time, consuming content. To your point, correctly making decisions, you know, calling plays and the outcomes of those plays. So all of that factors into your fan IQ. The second thing we've done, and we'll start opening this up more and more, but in the early going, we also said we want to put fans in a position to be successful, right? All of us are, you know, passionate sports fans. We want our teams to win. We don't want our teams to lose. And even when you're getting into something new and you're putting your time in, you want to be successful and you want that team to be successful. So there aren't plays in fan-controlled football where you can sub in, you know, your grandma to be the quarterback, right? There isn't a play to run backwards. You can't, you know, throw the ball out of bounds on purpose. All of the plays that you're choosing from are the plays that the coach would have been looking at and making his decision from, right? So we give you a broad range of plays to make decisions from, but they're all, you know, within the boundaries of how can we be successful on this next play. I've also layered in AI. In the first season, we used IBM Watson. IBM and Watson actually provided probabilities of first downs and probabilities of touchdowns on each of the plays. There's six plays every time a fan is making a decision. They have six options to choose from. And so Watson provided the probability of a first down and a touchdown based on some statistical models and back testing we did of down, distance, time on the clock, score, and the situation in the game. So we're really giving fans a lot of tools to make smart decisions and also putting some guardrails on it. So there isn't really a terrible decision to be made. With that said, you know, when you really lean into decentralization and you really think about, you know, what is the ultimate potential outcome here? To me, it's a team with no rules, right? And letting fans literally make every decision, no matter what the consequence. And that is a test that eventually we will get to. We will get to a point where we start a team from the ground up, a new expansion franchise with no guardrails, and we let fans just have at it. I think, you know, the mechanics are not yet there, both in our system and even if you look at DAOs, they're still very heavily weighted, you know, based on token ownership. So somebody can kind of go in and buy up a large majority of the voting power. And that doesn't really lend itself, you know, to true decentralization either. So I think when we get to a model that we can balance where we have, you know, widespread adoption, you have a team that has this grassroots fan base where it's large enough and everybody can have a say. To me, that becomes really, really interesting to test and see exactly what happens when, you know, you take the guardrails off.
Nice. Interesting. Looking forward to seeing this test. And also, I should say, I'm quite interested in testing my own fan IQ. I'm going to definitely come in and check out what your platform has to say about me as a fan. That should make for some interesting viewing. But no, I mean, essentially what you're saying is that you're using tech to try to solve that problem. How do you differentiate, say, one fan from the other and whose voice should be maybe slightly louder? Interesting use case. All right. Saurabh, motoring along. So now we've got the new season, which is launching in 2 weeks, barely. Tell me all about it. Where can we watch it, first of all? I'm in Europe. Is it on any streaming platform? How do I get access?
It is. There's multiple places. So our first season last year, we were on Twitch only. So you could come to twitch.tv/FCF and watch our games. We'll still be on Twitch. Our play calling is integrated into the Twitch platform, so you can watch and call plays all within the same viewing experience. But for headed into season two, we've got broadcast deals with NBC. So we're on NBC, LX, and Peacock, which is their OTT platform. We're on DAZN internationally. So we're in about 200 markets around the globe with DAZN. And then we have another distribution deal that we're actually announcing in the next couple of days here with Fubo TV. And that's going to be another option, which is an OTT broadcaster as well.
And if I want to participate as a fan, like pick a team and all that, I do that all on your like website, app, platform directly?
That's exactly right. The best way to do it would be to download the app. So it's the FCF app in Apple and Google Play. You download the app, you go through the registration process, you get to choose your team. Like I said, four of our teams, which are the original four teams in the league, those are free to play. There is no cost. There's no barrier. You can sign up and get started. We also have four teams, which are four expansion teams, which are the ones governed by NFTs. So if you're interested in that model and that concept, there's 7,500 NFTs per team. So a maximum of 7,500 fans will have the opportunity to make decisions for those four teams. And you would have to go on our website and buy one of those NFTs. And then it will give you, you know, get you through the gate, if you will, into, you know, making the decisions for one of those four teams, which is, you know, one of the teams is the Bored Ape Football Club. And we have, as you mentioned, the Gutter Cat Gang team, which is the Kingpins, and two others that are both associated with Web3 projects. One's with Steve Aoki, which is a team called Aidoki. And so if you come to FCF through the app or to the website, you can buy the NFT. And the NFTs are about $250 to $300, you know, give or take the price of Ethereum to get involved.
Nice. Okay. So I'll definitely check it out and see which model I want to try, whether work with the legacy teams or try the new season and the new teams. I'll take a look at that. But also just to put it out there, our audience for the podcast is usually people who are from the industry, executives. So they might be interested in checking it out as fans, which you've described how they can do that. But if they want to participate in any other way, I don't know if they're interested in exploring commercial partnerships or just finding out more and what they can do to explore, who should they reach out to?
Yeah, look, we've got some great brands and partners, you know, Gatorade, Progressive Insurance, Wendy's. These are all, you know, big brands that were sponsors in our first season that are coming back for season two. Feel free, you know, to reach out directly to me. I'm on Twitter, easiest place to get to me. It's SOHROBF on Twitter. You can also, you know, hit us up through the FCF Twitter account, or just email me. It's my first name at fcf.io. And we're always looking for great partners and sponsors and anybody that's got some really innovative technology. We've got a bunch of really great technology that we're bringing into the league as well. 180 cams, drones flying around, helmet cameras and mics on the players, really creating an immersive experience as well as an interactive experience.
Yeah, it has to be. You got to get the fans in there. You got to give them. Got to give them a lot.
Stay up to date with all things sports tech and sign up for our newsletter. You'll get a monthly breakdown of the most important developments in the global sports tech ecosystem, paired with exclusive interviews with industry leaders. Get all of this and more delivered directly to your inbox. Sign up today at sportstechx.com.
So we're getting up for the new season. Exciting times. Best luck with it, of course. I'm super curious to check it out. I have to say I didn't catch any of the first one. So this one, with all the buzz around it, would be interesting to see. That's essentially what you have looking forward to. But let's talk about maybe what has been the biggest challenge for you in getting up for this new season or even getting this whole thing off the ground. What was the most difficult thing that you have to deal with? And sometimes I like to ask the question differently. What is the best piece of advice that you got on your journey?
Well, you know, the most difficult thing was starting out back in 2014, 2015. I heard over and over again, I think you guys are too early, right? There was this theme that the vision that we saw was the world wasn't ready for it. And I think we got, you know, I mean, COVID was a horrible thing that happened to this world, but in some ways it really changed the landscape in terms of what became important. If you think about, you know, people now working from home a lot more, people looking for more digital ways to connect and to interact, that actually benefited our business tremendously. You know, Twitch grew like crazy, interactive gaming grew like crazy, obviously. You know, the NFT and crypto space grew like crazy, all amazing tailwinds for our story. And so it took a while a lot of perseverance, but we got through it. And finally now, I think the world is ready for what we're building. But from an advice standpoint, honestly, I'd go all the way back to my childhood from my parents, since I can remember. I think the biggest piece of advice they always gave me was, you can't be afraid to fail. And I think for any entrepreneur or anybody out there who's starting something, you know, the biggest challenge is mental. And it's about failure. And especially if you're, you know, leaving a steady job where you've got a paycheck and you can pay all your bills, and you're going to start something new where you don't know where the next paycheck's coming from, that thought that you might fail is really strong and powerful and tough to get around. And I think, you know, what I grew up with was this idea that, you know, if you fail, it means you just got knocked on your butt, but all you got to do is just get up. And I think when you put it in that sense, I mean, you look back at your life and all the times you got knocked down, we're still moving forward. The world's still going. And there's always a way to overcome. And so I think that's probably the best advice that I ever got, which I could, you know, really relate to as I build companies and make decisions, is, you know, you got to take the swing, because if not, you're never going to get there, but you can't be afraid to miss the ball.
My favorite commentator in football, Gary Neville, who's also a Manchester United player, shameless coincidence, keeps saying his favorite line is, failure is a bruise, not a tattoo. It's not something you carry with you. It's something that'll hurt, and then you move on. And before you know it, you won't think about it anymore. So sage That's words great. Of advice. Yeah, it's a nice one. No, it's a bit cheesy, but I still like it. all right, man, we've covered a lot. We've talked a lot about the league, of course. We've talked a lot about all the new things that you have coming up, the second season. We've covered how people can watch it, get on the Fan Control Football website, check out the teams, do all of that. And of course, reach out to Sorb directly if you want interested in commercial partnerships. Anything else beyond the league that we can look forward to from you guys as a company? You've already talked about a bunch of new sports that you're targeting. Is any of that in the near-term horizon? By that I mean in 22, or all of that is down the line?
Yeah, we've got a brand new venue where we're debuting, season two of Fan Control Football, and it's in Atlanta, state-of-the-art venue that's, I think, really going to, change the way people think about what a sports venue can look like. We're going to be playing a different sport in that venue in the fall. We have not announced what that will be, but we will be making some announcements here, you know, in the very near future for, you know, the second sport of our, you know, underneath our fan-controlled sports and entertainment umbrella. And then we're going to be doing a lot of testing and experimentation in the venue as well with other sports. So, our goal as a company is to really push the envelope when it comes to reinventing sports for the digital age and the digital fan, kind of rethinking the way fans can engage, creating, you know, our games are 1 hour. This is about short form, interactive entertainment. I think the days of watching 3 and 4 hour games, especially for the young fan, are gone. And so we think there's a really balance in between, which is, you know, real sports, real players, all the drama and passion and unpredictability that we love from real sports that you can't get out of a video game, and taking those concepts of video gaming with interactivity and the ability to kind of take, you know, short bites of it, not have to give your whole weekend to dedicated to watching. We're going to be really, really experimenting a lot. So if there's people listening out there that are interested in that, I would love for you to follow along and engage. I mean, this is all about power to the fans. We take fans' ideas seriously. We're always listening, and we want to build things that people are going to love and be part of.
And we're not afraid to fail while we're at it. That's the key to experimentation, right?
That's exactly right.
Some things won't, and yeah, you have to keep your ears open and listen to what the fans have to say, which is clearly your most important mantra. All right, Sorab, we have motored along and I've kind of got through all my questions, except for my last one, my favorite one, which is that, yeah, we're all sports fans first, I like to believe that we're lucky to work in this industry. So what has been your favorite sporting moment, either one that you've participated in yourself or you've watched as a fan in the stadium, on TV, whichever way you want to go?
Well, I hate to look back on like the glory days of high school, but I think for everybody that played sports that never made it professionally, that's what I go back to. I actually scored the winning goal. I played soccer my entire life, all the way up through college. I scored the winning goal in my regional finals in high school against our arch rival with a couple minutes left in the match. And just a moment for me that I'll never forget. Probably the highlight of my personal sports career. I think it's always those bitter rivalries are the ones you always remember. And the fact that I was able to beat them with my foot with one goal was something that I'll never forget. So that's probably the one that I go back to.
Nice. Yeah, it's been a while since the. At least I'll speak for myself. It's been a while since I've played in front of an audience of basically school kids when you were in school. But yeah, that's an incredible feeling. It might even just be 500, 1,000 people watching. But to get onto the pitch and face up against a school or a college that you really hate, like very viscerally, gutturally hate.
Exactly.
Good times, man. All right, Sarah, thanks for that, man. Really good chat. Good to know more about what you guys are up to. And I think April... Man, I can't believe I'm forgetting the date. Was it the 12th or the 14th?
The 16th.
The 16th. I was wrong on both counts. All right. So April 16th, I guess whoever wants to, and everybody should, check out what Fan Control Football League gets up to in season 2. Thanks so much for your time, Saurabh. Great having you on the show.
Yeah, thanks, Ron. I appreciate it.
All right, guys. That's a wrap for another episode of our Sports Tech All-Stars podcast. What's next for us? Actually, by the time this episode comes out, we would have released our latest report. We released our European Sports Tech report, our latest edition, a couple of weeks ago. Go check that out. It's on sportstechx.com/reports. You'll see all of our previous ones. And we have North America coming out now, which you'll probably have access to by the time you hear this, and Asia Pacific, which will come out after that. And given the year it has been for sports tech, it has been nuts. There is so much money and so much investment happening everywhere. We've broken all of that down nicely by region for you guys. So check that out. All right. Till we meet again in a couple of weeks. See ya.
Thanks for listening to the Sports Tech All-Stars podcast with Rohan Malhotra. If you like our show, let us know and leave a review. And if you want to know more about us, check out sportstechx.com, where you can find our latest industry reports and updates. For a deeper dive into all things sports tech, check out our comprehensive database, SportsTechDB, at sportstechdb.com. Don't forget to follow us on social media. You can find us at SportsTechX on Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook. Join us next time for another insightful conversation with a leader in sports tech.